Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bride.
Good morning. As my good friend Steve likes to say, happy hump day.
Happy hump day.
I heard you say it as you walked into the studio today.
I know, because that's a big thing for me. It's one of those phrases I think has sort of fallen out of favor.
I don't think it has.
I don't know, because I think I'm the only one that says it.
That's not true.
Well,
we did a survey of radio shows in Wisconsin alone on who says hump day on a Wednesday. I'm going 50%.
There we go. Huh?
Anybody? Julie, hey, guess what day it is? Oh, come on, I know you can hear me. Mike. What day is it, Mike? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo!
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love it.
So you're the camel.
I'm the camel, yes.
You're the camel. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we got a short show today.
Yeah, Brewers early.
Brewers baseball. The next
11:35.
Four Wednesdays?
I think so.
All right.
Did they dock our pay for the half hour? Do you know how that works?
I actually think we get an increase.
Do we?
Be nice.
Well, actually, per hour, our rate would go
That's
up.
True. Yeah. That's true. That's
based
true.
On workload.
All right. And then Annie Schwartz is going to join us to talk about the importance of salute to service and honoring the first responders.
Yes, we have 3 days left. Hump day, day after hump day, and 2 days after hump day. To get those nominations, I need their nominations. And I'm still looking for dispatchers, which is an incredible job, by the way. I've interviewed and I've honored dispatchers before. Or emergency healthcare providers, emergency room, doctors and nurses, still open for those nominations. So get them in. You can just click on the banner at WTMJ.com. Salute to service. Thanks to Waterstone Bank. But we'll talk about that with Annie. But we start with a big meeting in the White House.
Big meeting yesterday. Thank God he wore a suit.
Yeah.
But Mark
Not a
Carney,
jumpsuit.
Mark Carney was in the Oval Office yesterday, and it was a mostly, I would say mostly friendly meeting. There was no escalation as there was with Zelensky. They pulled back because a lot of the footage that I saw was a close up of either President Trump or of Prime Minister Mark Carney. And then it pulled back. I did see J.D. Vance sitting next to Trump. And it was just this flashback of like, is he going to say something?
So before we get to the substance, do you think that the Mark Carneys of the world and others who are now being put into these very volatile, potentially volatile situations, learn from the Zelensky experience? I think the answer is yes to that question.
Yeah.
They're being set up.
Well, and I think that was, you know, for all of us who are not, obviously we talked to Todd Hirsch last week about the
Canadian economist.
Yes, Canadian economist, about the giving more context into Mark Carney's election. But, you know, for most of us in America, we don't know. We've known Justin Trudeau, and maybe that was the limit for the average American and their ability to name other Canadian politicians. Mm-hmm. So as we're getting to know this man, you know, I think he demonstrated what you would expect from most world leaders. He was both a good combination, it seemed like, of flattery, and it wasn't too hostile. And yet he held his ground and came with facts.
I think what you're suggesting is he used facts and common sense and logic in his approach to this meeting.
And I would say the number one takeaway is that Canada, not for sale.
But when I looked at that beauty, I said that's the way it was meant to be. But, you know, I do feel it's much better for Canada. But we're not going to be discussing that unless somebody wants to discuss it.
Well, if I may, as you know from real estate, there are some places that are never for sale.
That's true.
We're sitting in one right now, you know, Buckingham Palace, that you visited as well.
That's true.
Having met with the owners of Canada over the course of the campaign last several months, it's not for sale, won't be for sale.
I love the honesty, man. He's just coming with the facts. Yeah, we're not selling to you. It's as dumb as your idea or in some people's minds, how as popular as your idea may be, and certainly there's a lot of resources in Canada, it's not going to happen, and it's sort of a fairy tale idea.
I also like how Carney referred to the citizens of Canada as the owners of Canada.
Yeah.
And I was trying to think, do you think Trump would ever phrase it that way?
No.
As far as, like, I represent the people, I work for American citizens. I'm not sure I've ever heard him say that. I work for you.
I think it'd be a singular concept for Trump in that he's the owner of the country right now as president. I own the country. You will do and say what I tell you.
I am the federal law, as he told the governor of Maine.
Yeah, I don't need that. effing Constitution.
And so the other thing that I thought was interesting, you know, there's always these theories as to where Trump gets his ideas from. And I think we cut off the clip a little bit too much, but he explains at the very beginning, he's like, I'm kind of an artistic guy and visual guy. Mm. And he talks a little bit about what the continent looks like, what the North American continent looks like. And he's like, that border just looks like someone took a ruler and it's just a straight line. And it was one of the things that he thinks that the line should go away. But it's like, what do you think a boundary is? Like, they're all artificial. Like, they were all negotiated and fought wars over. And like, every boundary of every country all over the world was an arbitrary made-up line.
That's the word I was going to use. Arbitrary. Now, there's some geographical lines, sure, certainly with rivers, obviously, but...
So there's some natural geographic, but then, like, let's talk about the UP and why that's not part of Wisconsin, right? Like, this is... It is arbitrary. That is what you point to for most of the conflict in the Middle East, in a lot of African countries, is because... People, outsiders, imperialism was just like, oh, this is your country now. And with no regard to the existing communities or tribes or anything. And it's like figure it out.
And the other part that I don't think gets enough attention. So Canada is an important ally of ours. They're our best customer and client. And he just ignores that part of it and just wants to piss him off all the time.
Well, I don't know if he knew that they are.
Yeah, he probably didn't.
This was another, yeah,
that's an assumption,
this was another
by me.
Fact check that came very swiftly.
Well, we don't do much business with Canada from our standpoint.
Respectfully, Canadians' view on this is not going to change on the 51st day. Secondly, we are the largest client of the United States in the totality of all the goods. So we are the largest client of the United States.
Boy, sometimes the facts just get in the way of that stuff.
Well, and let's take a break quickly, because I feel like that is, again, I was impressed with the tone, the striking of the tone.
Perfect tone.
Of,
yep.
Like, one of my favorite, I can't say the full thing on air, but one of my favorite lines are like, I don't know if it's a mantra, but it's like, do no harm, but take no excrement. Mm-hmm. Because I think that is the right tone of like, I will hold my boundary, I will not let you walk all over me. I'm also not going to go on the offensive. So we will do more of this, talk about more of this on the other side of this break.
Kristen and Steve on this Wednesday Hump Day edition. Thanks for tuning in as always. Or finding us on the stream, all those folks who are watching. I look good. Kristen always looks good. So we hope you're looking good on this fine Wednesday. Feeling great.
Feeling great.
Our weather is fantastic here in Southeast Wisconsin.
I can't wait to get outside later.
Oh, my goodness. I got stuff to do outside, as I always do. Just a quick point on the Carney-Trump visit. I think it highlights for some people, and I'm talking to those of us who maybe weren't Trump supporters, still call themselves Republicans and conservatives. It really makes a clear distinction between the intellectualism of a Carney versus a Trump, my opinion. Someone who comes with the facts, not these crazy conjectures, conspiracy theories, or opinions, and makes that sort of factual in his own way, like Donald Trump does every day. He cites his own statistics that aren't true in most cases. Have you ever seen any of the fact checking that goes on? I don't know why Trump voters ignore this, but it's brutal. I mean, he could do a speech and it'd be 50 things he said wrong in a speech.
Did you see this as far as someone thinking they figured out why he was convinced that oil was under $2?
No.
That he was looking at the because I think crude oil.
He saw a movie and a gas price?
No. I think crude oil actually is under $2 now. Maybe. So it's before gas gets to us.
I'm not the first person that said this, but the current president of the United States, Donald J. Trump, seems to be a person who's easily influenced by the last thing he's heard or seen. I.e. Alcatraz saw the movie. Apparently saw the Escape from Alcatraz movie.
And, well, that's not confirmed, is it?
I don't know. It seems rather, because it was broadcast in the area that he lives in, Mar-a-Lago.
Did someone?
Yeah.
Oh.
So, I mean, come on. That's just a quick point. I always said in the past.
Leave it to the internet. What did we do before the internet sleuths who just, like, they had nothing else to do but immediately go do the fact checking of what local broadcast was happening in Florida?
You know what we did before the
Sunday
internet?
Sunday night.
We didn't talk about politics as much as we do now. That's one thing, which is probably healthy for our.
Who was I talking to? Oh, it was when I got to talk to the former ambassador. No, was it the former ambassador?
I don't know.
I was talking to someone recently as far as the difference of, oh no, you know what it was? It was Todd Rosiak, who is the Brewers baseball Journal Sentinel, reporter. Mm-hmm. And he was just talking about the difference of, like, since he started in the 90s, of the ability of how fast you have to turn things around. And, like, the internet now is as far as how much faster everything has to happen versus, not that reporting was ever a cushy job, but there was a little bit more, less expedience to all of it.
Anyway, yeah, I mean, you've got to be on your game, and there's a lot to pay attention to. I'm going to bring this up with Bill and Joe. We'll bring this up with Bill and Joe on Friday, but I'm making the case for anti-intellectualism in the Oval Office is not a good thing, a good trait for a president of the United States or a leader of, as they say, the leader of the free world. It's not a good trait.
How did you feel? So going back to Bush.
Yeah.
Because that was kind of the knock on him. Obviously, like, I was in high school when he got elected, and I remember that was, you know, Comedy Central, I think at least before 9/11 happened, for that first year in his first term, had a show kind of making fun of him. And that was kind of the first, like, oh, I can have a beer with him. And that's why people liked him versus him being the smartest guy in the room. And then there was kind of like he played into it a little bit more because there was, I know, clips of him as a governor where he sounded much more eloquent than times that he sounded as a president. So did you have criticisms back then of as anti-intellectualism?
No, because I didn't see him that way. I voted for him, and I think he was underappreciated as a president, and certainly not all of his decisions were popular, because we know. I mean, some of the things that happened in the Middle East and those areas, Iraq, Afghanistan, all that stuff is certainly questionable. But I was a fan of his.
Is it questionable? Don't you feel like we look back and be like, that was a mistake?
Sure. The lens of time is always, it's easier to look back at things. At the time.
Do you feel like Vietnam was a mistake?
Probably, in the degree that we committed to it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We lost an incredible number of men and women.
And for what?
Yeah. At the end of the day, we sort of snuck out of there in helicopter trying to grab whoever we could on the last day, which just passed that anniversary just passed. You know, we can learn from presidents, but again, I can see the text line, a lot of people saying, okay, the Never Trumpers are back. Look, he's the president of the United States, Donald Trump. I'll give him that. But I have an expectation that the president of the United States is going to act and do the job of president at the highest level possible. I'm not seeing it. I don't like it. And I don't have to like him. I respect the office. But I think all of us as citizens of the United States, whether you voted for him or not, we have a standard. And that standard is being eroded significantly. And I don't like it. I'm not ever going to be happy about that. Now, can he step it up? Sure. Is that going to happen? Probably not.
What do you have to do to win your favor?
Start acting like a sane, rational human being and stop pontificating about nonsense. There's like, I have a list of 10 things I'm going to bring up with Bill on Friday, and Bill's not going to like it. You know, Alcatraz and all the other nonsense he's been spouting lately. What are you talking about? We have important things.
We do have important things to get to.
Let's
get to some of those. Let's talk about a little bit of security on the other side of this. As far as, does anyone actually care about the amount of information that DOGE has access to right now? So we'll talk about that on the other side of this.
Oh, happy Wednesday, everybody. Real quick, we want to get to something we're going to probably do a lot more of tomorrow.
Because we only have a couple minutes before we have to get to the bottom of the other hour news. But, you know, this has been, let's say a concern, maybe not for everyone, but that, you know, DOGE has access to a lot of our information. And apparently the goal is to create a centralized system that has access to data about Social Security, taxes, medical diagnosis, and other private information. And it's going to create, you know, I mean, that could create some vulnerabilities. And especially because DOGE still hasn't been recognized by Congress as a department, right? Like, it's still kind of just functioning because no one has stopped it from functioning.
Yeah.
Right?
They have unlimited access that I don't think they should have.
And so the question is, you know, I'm reading this in the Washington Post, and there's different experts saying why this could be a concern. In an era where we're so used to giving so much of our information away, do people actually care about this? And I think that's the point, because on the flip side of this, that is less about the government. And I'm not saying they shouldn't care. I'm just saying, asking, do they? Because there's also the conversation that's happening that, you know, Meta, if you've been paying attention, has a new AI app that if you only have 3 friends and you need 15 friends, Mark Zuckerberg thinks that this is the key to your other 12 friends.
Yeah, that's not creepy.
And I literally, at the commercial break, opened up my phone as you were doing one of your multiple partner reads. And this is what happens when there's this much data. So Facebook allegedly detected when teen girls deleted selfies so it could serve them beauty ads.
Wow.
And I say both of these things in the same breath as far as the conversation of what our own data is used for, to use against us, used to sell us stuff, used to exploit our information in ways that we don't even really wrap our head around. And I understand to a certain extent of having technologies talk to each other and having this data actually that the government has about us be used for good. I just don't trust that it will.
It's this wild concept, because a lot of us favor small government and definitely some oversights on the efficiency part of that story. So that's the weird thing that I have to reconcile, because as I say that, I also don't want unvetted people, some young tech bros that are friends of, or whatever relationship they have with Elon Musk, having access to private information, screwing up our social security system. And somebody asked me the other day at a restaurant, because we're just chatting about politics and stuff.
It's one of those people you meet in the streets?
Absolutely. Man of the people. About whether I was, because I'm going to be getting Social Security at some point, whether I'm worried about it. And the answer is yes, because I don't trust these idiots. And it's, again, I want...
You don't trust big balls?
No. Can you say that? Well, you just said it.
It was his name. That was his username. Yeah. And there was a sit-down meeting, I think, in... All right, we got to go to Greg.
All right.
But just for context, it was one of these young guys
on
Doge.
Yes, that's his nickname.
And that is his nickname. And that was like a conversation that happened. I don't know if it was in the White House or the Capitol or where it was, but that was... I didn't just say it to say it.
All right, we got lots more to get to on the Wednesday program, and
we got to Ask Us Anything, too. So yeah. If you have questions for us in the 11 o'clock hour, start sending those.
Oh, one of the rare people who gets their own walk-up music. That would signify that on this Hump Day edition, as was often the case, Annie Schwartz, law enforcement communications expert, author, writer, gal around town.
Gal around town? How do you like that for a title, Annie?
How's that, Annie Schwartz?
Well, I don't know. I guess it's better than gadabout or, you know, anything like that. I'm a little fecund here that I still get the walk-on music. I'm very excited. Back together on a Wednesday.
Absolutely. And one of the reasons I wanted to bring you on, of many reasons that I love talking with you about anything, really, is that we are getting ready to close out our nomination period for Salute to Service. That ends Friday, end of day. And I don't want to say I'm a little light this year, but I'm missing a few categories. And I wanted you to kind of talk about, from the perspective that you've had in like a career in the communication side of law enforcement, and certainly relationships across the board with all pieces of law enforcement, public safety community, why this is important, why you think it's important.
I think that we can never say to law enforcement, thank you enough. I think that we cannot recognize those that we salute during Salute to Service enough. And I shouldn't just say law enforcement, it's public safety.
Yeah.
And when I heard the promo that went on when I was waiting to chat with you, and we were talking about firefighters, nurses. Let's not forget those EMS professionals.
Yes.
Let's not forget people that are in the emergency medical services, space that, quite literally keep our police officers alive on the way to the hospital. So I have more than enough nominations to scare up there in the community. I just need my friends there to send those in, or they can share them with me and I'll get them to you. But that's there are so many acts that people in our public safety community do every day. And it's like, I don't need the kudos. I don't need to get recognized. But I'll tell you what I've noticed in the years that you and I have been doing this, Steve, is I have noticed that they're always so grateful when they are recognized. It just feels good to them, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And they share that, too, with all the people they work with.
Well, and that's the thing with Annie. Like, we were talking about nurses yesterday. And I think, specifically when you have someone who's in a loved one who's in the hospital, and you're so appreciative of the nurses and what they're doing and the care that you're getting. And for them, it's kind of just another day, like, cause that is their job. Do you think that sometimes some of the first responders and the public safety folks, they just see it as their job, and that they do so many incredible things every day that it's kind of their status quo, and it's only us who, it's like sometimes the worst day of our lives that can recognize what they do and what they mean to people?
You know what, Kristen, I think there's always a measure of personal pride that a public safety professional feels when they accomplish something that most of us think is above and beyond. But I'll tell you, I remember in all the years that I was at the Milwaukee Police Department and as a journalist covering the police, every time I went to an officer and said, hey, I want to highlight, you know, something that you did, or when I've been with the fire department and I'll say to Chief Lipsky, hey, you know, this was great work by one of your people. A lot of times they come back and they just thought, I was just doing my job, mm-hmm. ma'am. And that's always the answer. And that to me is incredibly humble. But I think at a time when, well, I'll say this, and I, you know, God forbid I should wade into politics because I always get scared when I get in that pool with you guys. But law enforcement, at least since January, has felt more supported. They've felt more supported than ever in the community and in the federal government, at least. And I know there are so many opinions about what's happening as far as, you know, immigration and all those kinds of things. But I'll tell you that this is another way that we get to let law enforcement know that they are appreciated, that we are watching out. I should say public safety. I keep saying law enforcement because that's just what I think of first. But they are starting to feel supported in a large number of arrests because they don't feel great about having to, you know, arrest the same people all the time. But they are really when we honor them the way that you do, Steve, during the salute to service, I can't tell you what that means to them, even though they're never going to say that out loud more than once, certainly. But I know they appreciate being recognized. I know they do.
Over the years, you and I have talked about officer wellness, training, resources, challenges, community policing, all sort of the concepts that are wrapped around public safety. And in your case, your connection to the police community, law enforcement. I guess for me, when I put these together, the big stories and the honorees, they stand out in a way. I guess I'm trying to get you to sort of pinpoint what it is. I mean, they all share the humbleness. That's exactly right. Because I've had to sit in a studio with them and bring it out of them. But there's a point where a switch gets turned on and a piece comes out of that story where you can tell the officer or the firefighter, the, you know, medical provider, dispatcher, whatever it is, they want to tell that story. And it's sort of the communications piece that you know so well. Talk about how that maybe has evolved over the years, because they used to clam up, right? I mean, that used to be the story, right? We'll do our jobs. We're not interested in telling you what. But that's changed. We had spokespeople, and we saw the rise of social media. It certainly changed, Annie.
I would say absolutely. And certainly post George Floyd in 2020, which is when the attitude toward law enforcement probably became the most negative it had ever been. And I feel like now that we're 5 years beyond that, that tide has turned into a way to honor law enforcement. And I'll tell you, whenever I talk with our public safety professionals, and when they say, I really don't want to get out there and do the story, or I really don't feel like, you know, highlighting myself, I will always say, well, highlight someone else, highlight others. Talk about the way that you worked as a team, because while you may not feel that it was extraordinary, the public feels like it's extraordinary, and we want the public to feel that way. We want lawmakers to feel that way, that what officers and firefighters and EMS professionals and dispatchers, what all those people do is important, and every single thing they do saves a life.
All right. Last thing before I let you get out here, and I want you to make the case for me why people should nominate someone. And you're talking to chiefs. You're talking to someone who leads departments in public safety communities across this southeastern Wisconsin area. Give me a 1 minute why they need to nominate someone for our service presented by Waterstone Bank.
Because every time that somebody in public safety is watching a negative story on the news and they say, why don't they do the good stories? This is an opportunity for the good stories. And it's an entire week of good stories. And if you want to be able to share that feeling with the community that what public safety professionals do here is important, this is one way to say thank you.
All right, Annie Schwartz, always great to talk with you. We'll do it again down the road. Always appreciate you.
I sure hope so. I like coming back. And now that I know that you're going to do the music,
There you go. It's even more of a reason.
That was the selling point.
I'm excited.
Yeah. Not the money. It's just the selling point of the music. I got you.
There you go. Oh, absolutely. Well, thank you both very much. I'm so glad we had a chance to talk about this today. And please, if you're listening and you know a public safety professional, please send in that nomination. We'd love to recognize you.
All right. Thank you, Annie Schwartz.
Thanks,
Annie. And the way you do that, by the way, is you just go to WTMJ.com. Click on the Salute the Service banner. You can see it right there on the top of the homepage. And it's a quick little survey, name, first responder, contact, and a little brief couple paragraphs on why you're nominating that individual. I want to see those great stories because this weekend I'm going to pick my honorees. So, and that interview week is going to be hell because it's a lot of interviews that producer Jazz is going to have to put together.
It's going to be a joy.
It's a joy, but it's a lot of work. Trust me. Because Jazz and I work on these, and it's a...
Am I not going to be there?
You can join us, too. You're new to this. You're new to all this stuff.
And there's going to be a not on the show for those half hours.
No, you are going to be on the show. You are going to be part of this.
Okay.
So you're going to have to do a little extra work, too. You ready for
that?
That's fine. All right. It's all happening next week. All right. Well, we got two more breaks to fit in 15 minutes. Busy day on the show today. Early show out. Brewers. 11:35 start time today. So,
well, not the first
pregame.
Yeah, I think it's 12:10 is the
first. But early.
Beautiful day. Do you think they'll open the dome?
You know, they should. It's pretty nice out. It was nice this morning. I walked out on the driveway. I looked outside. This is an amazing weather day in Wisconsin. As the son of a meteorologist, that actually carries weight. She's Chris and I'm Steve. Quick break.
All right, Steve.
Yes.
As someone who does a lot of travel,
mm-hmm.
Are you nervous to fly?
No.
Still? In this
I don't really get nervous.
In this news cycle, you're not...
I travel a lot, so...
Well, I'm just saying because you saw this, what's happening in New York, right?
Yeah.
And so I don't know if we haven't talked about this at least.
You know, I don't know if you know this, my brother's an air traffic controller.
And your dad's a meteorologist.
How about that?
Air traffic controllers directing, so obviously they direct planes. And at Newark Liberty International Airport on April 28th, they briefly lost contact with pilots.
Sounds like a bad thing.
So malfunctioning equipment left them unable to hear or see aircraft traveling to and from the very busy airport. I don't know if you've flown out of Newark, but like that's what, you know, one of the main three.
Big East Coast airports.
Yeah. And we were considering, I love New York City. I lived there for 3 years. Haven't been back to New York since October 2019. And so Mike and I were debating, maybe that would be a fun weekend trip for my birthday this year. And I gotta be honest, I'm not like super pumped to be traveling right now. When I read, and I don't know if that's just like feeding into the fear.
I think
so. But that's a terrifying incident. I mean, this is apparently multiple air traffic controllers took trauma leave because it traumatized them of not being able to do their job because of this malfunctioning equipment.
It's a concern, yes. And I'm not going to say I'm not concerned because our air safety is really, really important. Millions of people fly every day, some for work, some for pleasure, and some for leaving the country, international flights. Really important that we get this right.
Yeah.
I'm going to blow up two administrations, the Biden administration and this administration. They know this is a problem. That's the failing infrastructure in all of the pieces of this air safety problem, and they sort of kick the can down the road. Now, whether we take Sean Duffy, Secretary of Transportation, on his word that they're going to revamp this, one word of caution. Please don't tell me Elon Musk is going to fix this for us, because I don't trust him.
All right, we got to go to break, but that was just kind of top of mind. I'm like, do we want to fly to New York right now?
And you know what? Since we take texts on the Citing Unlimited Talk and Text line, do you feel safe flying? Yes or no?
855-616-1620. And while you're at it, ask us a question, because coming up at 11, we're going to do Ask Us Anything.
It's coming up.
We'll be back after this on Point Taken on WTMJ. All right. In your 66 years of Catholic life, have you ever seen this much interest in conclave and the choosing of the next pope?
No, this is off the charts.
Why do you think it's so much more... I mean, because it wasn't, 12 years for Pope Francis. It wasn't like we didn't have 24-hour news cycles back in 2012, 2013. So what do you think has changed?
politics has inserted itself into the search for the new pope.
You think it's social media?
Social media, obviously.
Apparently some of the cardinals are like on the gram doing things, posting about themselves.
Two big movies, one Conclave, which we will talk about a little bit, and then Two Popes, which I loved as well, about sort of the life of a pope.
Well, the Two Popes was about Francis and was it Benedict?
Yes. I believe so.
So this is crazy to me. Politico is reporting that cardinals are watching Conclave, the movie, for guidance on the actual conclave.
It's nuts.
So I saw this headline this was yesterday. And I was like, there's no way that this is true. But yes, as crazy as it might sound. So there's 133. You were just watching all of them on you're like, how many are there? And I knew that there was over 100, but there's 133 cardinals, and they are entering the Sistine Chapel, starting this process. And one involved in the real thing admitted to a Politico reporter that some have watched it in the cinema and are getting a little bit more insight as to what the heck they're supposed to be doing.
I don't know if they get a training manual for cardinals, but think about it. It hasn't happened in how many years, 12 years or whatever it was?
And I think there's a bunch of new ones, right? There's 108 of the 133 were appointed by Pope Francis. So there's a lot of new folks in there.
Yeah, I think there's certainly
there's a lot of men in there, I should say.
And just because you're a priest or a cardinal, you don't lose your interest in media and consumption of movies. And you most of them have seen this just to see how it compares, right?
Well, that's the question. It's like, are they watching it to see the comparison? Or are they watching it for insight on what to do?
Yeah. Now, I think I was talking to Greg Matzik. I don't know if it was on it wasn't on the show, but I talked to Greg Matzik about this because I think they talked about this on one of their shows. And how real Conclave is. Like, are there like factions, obviously conservative cardinals or liberal cardinals, or geographical differences, obviously the language differences. I'm fascinated by that. But here's the thing.
Do you think they like pick their lunch tables? Like, you can't sit
with us? I don't know. The same sort of weirdness that we have in high school and cliques, maybe having cardinal cliques. But this is fascinating.
You think there's like psychological warfare and like Big Brother survivor type things as far as trying to manipulate.
You know, we were talking about the office of president before. There's only one pope for the whole world. That's a pretty big job.
Oh, yeah.
You don't think people have ambition and ego and drive to have that job? Because it sounds like it's a pretty sweet gig. All right. That's our take on the search for the pope. How many days do you think? Just guess. I'm going to say a week.
I will go 5 days.
Okay, almost a week. I'll go 7, you go 5.
Sure. And are we doing Price is Right rules?
What's that?
So if it's 6, I win?
Oh, you tried to lock me out? I see what you did there. Yeah, no, we're not doing that. All right, news is next. Don't forget to get those questions for Ask Us Anything.
Now it's time for Ask Us Anything on Point Taken. Got a burning question? Give us a call or text on the Siding Unlimited Talk and Text line at 855-616-1620.
Here's an easy one. I was looking at the text line, Chris and Brian and Steve on this Wednesday edition, hump day as I like to call it. Are you worried about Social Security? Yes. Everything about it.
I am too, because I don't think it's going to be there by the time I can get it.
It's going to be different, I can guarantee you that, because there's this period of about 20 years, now you're still pretty far out from that, where it's going to get really hard to balance the budget when it comes to Social Security. But after that, because of declining birth rates, it actually gets...
tax billionaires.
Or we could. But again, I know you say that all the time, but it's not the answer to everything. There's only what? How many?
I didn't say it's the answer to everything. I said it's the answer to... But if we hired the cap, because...
That's a different story.
That is the cap, right? That's not just... $177,000. Everything after that, you don't pay Social Security on.
Right.
So we could change that.
But that's not taxing the billionaires. Billionaires is a different conversation. That's something... Now, I agree with you on what you just said. Raise the cap. Raise the damn cap. Make it easier.
So yes, there are solutions out there that just involve people who make more money paying more.
Yeah, you know what that would require? Congress actually doing something about it. Because they've kicked another kick the canner down the rotor. I just made that up. All right, questions. All right, so I just saw one pop in. Because the text line shifts a lot. Why do you think that you need to be a minimum? This is a good one, because we just talked about this, the conclave. Why do you have to be minimum 70 years old in order to be pope?
I have no idea, but it is interesting, especially juxtaposed against our conversations around our politicians in the U.S. right now being very old. Obviously, when we thought the election was going to be Biden versus Trump, two men in their late 70s.
Yeah.
When you look at the makeup of the Senate, what did we say? Chuck Grassley's 91 or 93?
He's in his 90s.
He's in his 90s.
It's an oldie.
And kind of the conversation of, dude, just retire. What are we doing? And so, but the opposite of that is like, that's the minimum you have to be. So
that's
I don't know why. What's also interesting is, was it always 70 or older?
That I don't know. I'm not a papal expert, but
it's not always like 70 was like living past 70 was not always the average
life expectancy used to be like 45.
That's
so
what
probably, I mean, we've had popes for a long time.
They're just like weeding people out. It's like, this guy's got good health.
Here's the problem I have. And again, I'm a Catholic, but I'm not afraid to be critical of the Catholic faith and certainly the leadership in Vatican City. I think that they might want to think about this because what do we know about popes? They start at 70. They age really quickly. There's a lot of load on a pope.
That's actually a good trivia question. Who was the longest serving? Someone will probably know on the text line.
Is it John Paul?
Serving. So was he appointed or whatever? Is appointed? Is that the right verb?
Oh, voted on by the conclave.
Voted on. Yeah. So if it starts at 70, who served the longest term?
He might be up there. I mean, again, not a papal expert, right? But you just give yourself. Now, there's a counter to this, right?
Yeah. So this is it. Pope John Paul was 58 when he was elected. So are we just.
So this is a reason. Why, though?
But is that, have we fact-checked that you have to be over 70? Or did you just take that as gospel when someone texted in that question?
Because we read the questions.
But you didn't know? I thought you were the one who's such a
papal expert. I said I'm not a papal expert. Is that the term, papal expert? I don't know. All right, Texter, if you misled us, I just wasted a lot of my time. And I will be irritated about that, and I will find you.
So
i.e. Liam Neeson.
Here's one that's pretty open-ended from James in Milwaukee. How do you two, meaning you and I, see the next, how do we see the next 2 years will go? Does that mean like up until midterms? Is that the time frame that
probably,
you're insinuating?
I mean, like politically?
I don't know. That's legitimately what the question says. How do you two see the next 2 years will go?
Lots of the same things we've seen in the first few months. So, I mean, a lot of turmoil, a lot of executive orders. Barring some change to that ability to create and craft executive orders, why would the president change? Because he just keeps doing it. Now, the interesting dynamic to that is courts are pushing back on everything. Almost every executive order has corresponding court action or court actions. So I guess in the next 2 years or less, we're going to see the results of those actions, right? The courts are going to say, and in the biggest, highest court, Supreme Court says, no, Mr. President, you can't do that, or yes, Mr. President, you can. That will sort of dictate the future. And I'm leaning in the, no, you can't do this. But again, courts surprise, judges and justices surprise. So I don't really know. But it's going to be a wild and crazy ride. And I think more of the same. I mean, what do you think?
I am the interested, worried as far as, it feels like there's a lot of things brewing for the economy. Things that actually also predated Trump. The crypto thing just feels like lighting money on fire, right? And so there's the wealth inequality. Like, there's a lot of things having to do with the economy that now it feels like the tariffs and that uncertainty kind of could be the match that a lot of stuff could start to feel really bad. I sent you this Atlantic article as far as the unemployment rate for recent grads is very high right now. And what does that mean as far as the ability of AI being able to do a lot of what recent grads can do without that other additional work experience? So there's enough things kind of brewing as far as what's going to happen with people's wallet and dollar and how much that will impact people who like the president right now and like this administration, but when things start feeling much worse, what that will look like.
There's a lot of confusion on the Pope thing, so we were led astray.
We're going to Google it.
It's basically, at least from my understanding, just quickly looking at, you have to be younger than 80, but not
be
like,
younger than 80.
Yeah, which is still pretty old.
All right, let's take a break and let's get to the bottom of this.
All right, and then your questions, welcome, 855-616-1620, Siding Unlimited, talking text line. Send them in, we'll answer them. Chris and Steve, 620 WTMJ.
All right, honoring those who dedicate their lives to keeping us safe, WTMJ is highlighting first responders who went above and beyond this past year through Steve Scafidi's Salute to Service, presented by Waterstone Bank. You can nominate your first responder now at WTMJ.com or on the WTMJ mobile app. The nomination period is open now through May 9th, so that's Friday. You got two more days. Finalists will be recognized during Hero Week, May 19th. Through May 23rd. Help us tell your stories. WTMJ's Steve Scafidi's Salute to Service, presented by Waterstone Bank.
Thank you for that. I appreciate that extra mention. All right. This one came in. It has to do with Mother's Day because we know it's coming up, right? So, Kristen, what is your request? Because this person says there's kids or someone, or she requested strawberry shortcake. Ooh, that sounds good.
That does sound good.
What's your special request?
I don't know
request?
If I have a request.
How do you celebrate Mother's Day with
my
you?
My parents are coming to town.
Lovely,
so we'll
Debbie,
with,
yes.
Yes, we'll be with, my parents will be here, so I'll celebrate my mom. And we're doing a lot of yard work. That's not really a break. We're going to go to dinner on Saturday instead of brunch on Sunday. And I don't know. We don't have a tradition yet as far as Mother's Day. I'm not to the point yet where I'm like, I just want the day alone. I want to be left alone. Like, we'll do something nice all together. Yeah. I don't know if Mike's going to give me, I got this sweet Frankie necklace last year for Mother's Day.
That's cool.
So I don't know what he has planned this year.
Yeah, Kathy and I will be visiting my mother and we'll be remembering her mom, Diane, mm-hmm. who passed away. So this is a big year for sort of that. And then we're going to be having dinner or lunch, I guess. Not brunch, but dinner. What's the combination of dinner and lunch?
Brunch?
Brunch is in the morning. This is in the afternoon. Whatever that
supper?
Would be. Supper? I don't know. Is there a clever name for the mid-afternoon?
Dinner?
I don't know.
I think we just could make it up, but I'm not sure. It's
it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So we're going to do that with the kids on, I think, Sunday, which makes sense. And then, you know, celebrate moms, because, as I said, women are smarter than men. That's one of my absolutes. And moms, like nurses, do a lot of the heavy lifting that dads, frankly, don't have the time for or just don't want to do.
I would say not have the time for is not necessarily the conclusion I would come to.
Yeah, I don't know.
You can make the time. Spend less time in the toilet.
Completely different topic. Why a tattoo at this age? Because I'm commemorating my 50th state. I thought I'd do something different. I'm not afraid to do things I've never done before. I guess that's my deal.
Did you ever consider getting a tattoo earlier? Was there ever a time
yes.
that you're like, oh, I think I want to get this, and then you changed your mind?
Like a lot of Packers fans, I flirted, I think it was after 96, with the idea of getting some sort of Super Bowl, and I think my wife slapped me upside the head probably and said, you're not doing that. But interestingly enough, she's okay with this one. Now, she's also of this mind. You're going to cry like a baby. Rose is going to tape it and record it, and then you're going to be embarrassed. I said, I'm not doing that. I'm going to tough it out.
I don't think you're going to cry. You may look a little like Steve Carell in 40-year-old version when he's getting his chest waxed.
Yeah.
There may be some screams, but maybe not a solo tear streaming down your cheek.
All right. Another question. I'll let you answer it. What did MPS do with all the money from Biden during COVID? Obviously not on the lead issue. It's a fair
question. I'm not going to pretend that I know the answer to that.
It's fair question. Because now they have money problems, even though there was tremendous amounts of money bleeding out of the federal government.
I mean, I think a lot of it also went to trying to fix like HVAC issues and trying to like air, because there's certain buildings. The thing is, a lot of these, as we're learning now, especially with the lead problem, is that these buildings are old. And so there's the parts of actually paying teachers and paying staff, but then also the facilities themselves needing upgrades. And so I'm not going to pretend that I know the answer as far as where all that money went, because I am not for the retention for all those kinds of details. I'm sure I read it once and now I got replaced.
Would you agree
else.
With me that both sides, left and right, Democrats, Republicans, own this issue because they've ignored it for decades? And both sides
which part?
The fact that we have funds to fix this and they refuse because it was Milwaukee.
I mean, MPS is just a disaster. I don't think there's anyone out there defending MPS right now as far as decisions that have been made and the bureaucracy in there. And it's interesting. This is my thought, because I am a public school proponent. I would love to send Frankie to an MPS school. We'll see. We'll cross that bridge when we need to. But I had this conversation with someone who's like, why is there not more anger amongst parents and demanding better of MPS? And one, I think there is. I think that there is a lot of people, especially after the chaos of last year, after the referendum passed, and then what, 6 weeks later, all the Posley stuff erupted. But I also think there is something about when we have these conversations about public and private schools and charter schools, that when you think about the traditional public school setting and your neighborhood school, I almost think of it as when we think of like health insurance and the pool of people who the healthy people balance out when someone gets sick and health insurance having to pay out for that. And as more healthy people leave, everyone's premium goes up because there's a higher concentration of sick people. And it's not an exact analogy, but as far as when you have a neighborhood, and if you keep having the parents who are the most engaged and the most concerned about their kids' school leaving, so either leaving by going to the suburbs or leaving by taking their kids to private school, and the parents who are left are busy and working and stressed and don't necessarily have the bandwidth to be as engaged and as involved, like, it changes the dynamic of people who are demanding accountability to the school board, to the superintendent. So that's my
I think you nailed
theory
it.
On that.
Parents.
So that's why, like, my guilt or my intention on staying in MPS is to be part of the solution and start part of the parents that are there being like, what are we doing to make this better?
Yeah, parents, step up. You want a school district that actually teaches your kids? Now is your time to shine as parents, not just the students, not just the administration. All right, got a chance for a couple more questions on Ask Us Anything. We got to take a quick break here. Then, of course, Connie Weber. Then early Brewers today, going for the sweep today. All that coming up after this.
All right. Couple more questions. I think this is a good question. You probably have a stronger opinion than I do. Year three as a starter, is this a make or break year for Jordan Love? Made all that money. Moolah, specifically in the text. Optimistic or pessimistic, he can return them to the big show.
I'm a big Jordan Love supporter, and I think he's a great quarterback, but this is a make or break year. He has to perform it as he did 2 years ago at the end of the season, at last eight games. We need that. Now, it's about the pieces around him. I think they've got some great talent on this team. They're obviously still a player.
We didn't really get to talk about the draft.
No.
Are you excited about the draft picks?
Yeah, because I love the fact they pick receivers. They don't do that. It was when they go back to like 2007 or whatever it was when they picked Javon Walker, or 2003, one of those years. I'm excited about this team. I like the potential, and I'm a Jordan Love supporter. I think he's a great quarterback.
Are you still LaFleur thumbs up?
Yeah, I mean, he's done a lot. He's got a great record. He's one of the most successful young coaches in the NFL, so you have to give him credit for that.
Great eyebrows.
His eyebrow game is scary to me. It's like too much time spent on the eyebrows.
You have no idea how much time he spends
on his
eyebrows.
Don't you think it's a lot looking at those eyebrows? You think that's natural? I don't think so.
I'm just a fan of how I feel like when I was growing up, a lot of the NFL coaches were pretty dumpy. There's a lot of very attractive NFL coaches now. And maybe that's because I got older, so now they're more age appropriate. But like, there's a handful of coaches who are not terrible to look at.
Let's end this one because it deals with Oak Creek and this Bucky story, which I didn't see how the Common Council thing came out. I was trying to find it, and then I got waylaid by something else.
Because you have ADHD like me?
So I'm going to predict the Buckies will happen in Oak Creek. But the interesting side story now is Franklin apparently is courting a Costco in the area of 27th and Drexel, which I am excited about.
That feels close. I mean, Franklin and New Berlin feel really close together to have. I mean, I'm surprised someone in like the North Shore isn't trying to get a Costco.
There's another one somewhere. It's a smart text.
This feels too close together.
There's another one being proposed or has been approved. But I like this idea. And I think for the folks in Franklin and Oak Creek, which a lot of you, the biggest pieces of Milwaukee County as far as geography and their populations are both exploding, both Franklin and Oak Creek, they're like neck and neck. This development is part of, I think, is going to be a larger Oak Creek-Franklin development, both sides of the 27th Street border. The Oak Creek side is going to see, I think, some residential, some single family, which I called for.
So speaking of, this is another thing I saw with Costco. In certain areas, they're to help ease like the affordable housing crisis, they're building units on top of Costco's now.
Wow.
And so it's like, because you think, you know, how big
smart
Costco's are.
Yeah.
Like there's one that's going to have like 800 units in it.
All right, we got 30 seconds. I have a very specific ask about Costco. Somebody shared with me a post because I'm in search of a 4-foot-tall Japanese maple tree that I'm going to put in a large planter on my patio. Can somebody tell me if this is true that Costco is selling these Japanese maples at Costco? I need to know the answer to that question. Text me 855-616-1620.
Can't you just Google that?
I don't want to. Tell me. Costco's coming to Conemaugh. There we go. I love the fact that you text live to the things we're talking about.
That's a great location.
We got to get out of here.
All right, we got to get out of here.